Richmond, Virginia, 23255. God bless you. Be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. But one point I'd really want to make, and that is that you must understand that the major media in America is uncontrolled and has been for the better part of 50 years. Our educational system is controlled, and most of what the average person believes just isn't true. Why did this happen? Well, it's because there's a small group of people who have a different outlook on the world, and they believe that they have the right to determine the future of our country. And we can go to the polls every 4 years, but we end up voting for the candidate of their choice, not the candidate of our choice. And of course, they get their people into the courts, and this is one of the major reasons we're having so many of the problems we are today. As we've turned our back on suddenly a nation that was built upon restricting the power of government and embraced a society where certainly every aspect of society is controlled in one way or another, usually by one or another aspect of what the federal government bureaucracy wants, as we move away from freedom towards a totally regulated society. Well, with us this evening is William Grigg, the former editor of the New American Magazine, certainly editor of Republic Magazine for a time. Certainly he is certainly one of the finest writers that we have today, and you can read his articles certainly on Lou Rockwell frequently. You can read his articles on his blog. You can read his articles from Radio Liberty. He writes the monthly Radio Liberty newsletter and does a great job on it. And I will tell you this latest newsletter is one of the finest ones we've seen. But without further ado, William Grigg, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, it's always a pleasure and an honor to be with you.
I remember, of course, that this is a different audience that you talked to last time. And so if you want to repeat some of the things you said, and of course we're talking really about the tragedy of what's happening to our judicial system. But if you want to repeat some of what you said before, fine, or well, really whatever you want to talk about. But I know you share my concern that we have a very real problem with the judicial system. And when suddenly the system of law breaks down, then very soon the system of order breaks down shortly thereafter. Go right ahead.
Well, certainly the type of order that is conducive to individual liberty and the pursuit of genuine happiness breaks down when the law is destroyed and respect for the law is made impossible. You probably read, and I'm confident that your audience contains many people who've read Frederick Bastiat's essay, The Law, which is a slim, pithy volume that examines what the real law is, the moral law that is rooted in the laws of nature and nature's God, to use Jefferson's formulation, and one that was espoused by people like Blackstone and other jurists in our tradition. What Frederick Bastiat pointed out is that when government is emancipated from the law and it begins to act in defiance of the law, then the concept of law itself is brought into disrepute, and that leaves the citizens with the terrible dilemma of either having nothing but disrespect for the law or living under undisguised tyranny. And that's pretty much the situation we're in right now, because we're told the law consists of whatever it is that the government does, that the government considers to be appropriate, that there is no standard that is fixed and immovable, to which the government itself must be held accountable.
Well, let me just point out that we do carry the book The Law by Frederick Bastiat, and it was written about the same time as Karl Marx was writing the Communist Manifesto. And basically, of course, these two basic ideas of how society should be organized, and certainly Frederick Bastiat was saying, no, we do not want to go that way. We don't want to have certainly a godless government or directed by a small group of men. We want a society based under God's law where men can be free.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply pointing out that basically, of course, there's been a transformation of America. We still look like the same country. We still have the same flag. We talk the same words, but the meaning and the function of government has changed and changed dramatically. At one time, we were truly a Christian nation. It didn't mean that everybody had to be a Christian, but it meant that our ideas, and certainly our judiciary, founded its base upon Christian principles. There was a God, there was a right, there was a wrong, and certainly there was no wall of separation between church and state. Our ideas and certainly idealism came from a belief in God, and that where the Spirit of the Lord, there is liberty, and that people could rule themselves certainly under the jurisdiction of God. We didn't need an all-powerful government to tell us what to do. God would tell us what to do, and we were answerable to Him. But, of course, once you remove that situation where people are not, were no longer answerable to God, then we have a situation where they must be ruled by government. Men will either be ruled by by government or by God, in which you want. Well, today, people are ruled by government because we have created a wall of separation between church and state. And back almost 50 years ago now, they took God. It is 50 years ago, 50 years ago last year. They took God and prayer out of our schools. They knew exactly what they were doing, because they knew that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, and the people who were doing this didn't want liberty. They wanted a ruling elite, and that's what we have today. But this carries over into the judicial system, and the whole basic structure of our judicial system is breaking down so that we do not determine what's right and wrong according to God, but according to the judges. But go right ahead.
That's exactly right. That's something that had been warned about in some of the anti-federalist papers. Many people are familiar with the Federalist Papers, written under the pseudonym of Publius by Madison, Hamilton, and Jay, but there was a larger group of people who were from the same founding generation whose patriotic credentials were just as highly burnished and just as estimable as those of the people who wrote Publius. They were called the Anti-Federalist Papers. There are several loose collections of the Anti-Federalist Papers, and one of the pseudonymous authors was Brutus, probably Patrick Henry. And in one of his Brutus letters, the author, presumably once again Patrick Henry, was talking about the potential pitfalls of the judicial system outlined in Article 3 of the Constitution. He said that unfortunately there will come a time when judges will consider themselves to be emancipated from every power under heaven, and even then they would have doubts as to whether they're actually subject to heaven's jurisdiction. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the import of what was said. And that, unfortunately, is what has happened over the course of about 200 years. Really, in the course of less than a century, there was a revolution within the judicial branch having to do with the principle of jury nullification. Jury nullification, digested to its essence, is an understanding of the fact and the principle that a citizen jury has plenary, that is to say, full authority, to rule with respect not only to the fact of the case, but also with respect to the law being applied in the case. If the law itself is seen to be incompatible with the natural law, if it's seen to be justified in justice rather than something which is consonant with the principles of the natural law, then the law can be set aside as applied to this particular defendant. You can find the defendant guilty of committing the acts in question while concluding as conscientious jurors that the law itself is infirm and should not be applied to this given case. This was something that had been done in the century or so leading up to American independence, most famously in the cases involving John Pater's Anger, who was a rabble-rousing journalist who had induced the ire of a colonial governor by publishing essays criticizing the documentable corruption of his administration. Zanger was put on trial, I believe, twice for seditious libel, which was considered a criminal offense rather than a civil tort. Of course, today we don't really have seditious libel laws. If you libel somebody, you can be hauled before a civil court and found guilty of a civil offense or a tort. But back in the 18th century, seditious libel was often punished by an indefinite term in gaol, as they called it. You could find yourself facing the equivalent of life in prison for being convicted of seditious libel against a public official. And what happened is that in the first trial of Mr. Zanger, if I remember the case correctly, the jury set aside the application of the law because they were convinced that he had told the truth, and the truth is a perfect defense against libel. For the second time, a grand jury was not convened, but rather the prosecutors used a different means to try to convict Mr. Zanger of the same offense, and once again, the jury set aside the application of the law. That's where the process of jury nullification, as it's commonly known today, really took root in our country in the early 18th century. So by 1796, after American independence, after the Constitution had been ratified, and the Constitutional Republic was beginning operations, there was a Supreme Court ruling which recognized not only that jury nullification is an important, not indispensable, part of the justice system, but also that federal judges had a requirement to inform juries of the extent of their authority, that they were not limited to being determiners of fact, but they're also in the position of being judges of the validity of the law. And the purpose of the judge in these proceedings in federal court, presumably in other criminal courts, given that the federal government only has a couple of crimes that are supposed to be subject to its jurisdiction, that the role of judges in court proceedings was simply to make sure that the procedure that was used to try the facts and to examine the law was orderly, and that you didn't have an instance where you didn't have a situation, rather, in which one side or the other could be consciously engaging in deception, and that the law was clearly explained. The judge would explain the law, but he would not define the law. That's a very important distinction. A judge will explain the statute. A judge will explain how the law applies to a case, but he leaves to the jury the decision as to whether the law actually does apply in terms of inflicting a punishment on the defendant. That was the Supreme Court's holding in 1796. About 100 years later, 1894, there was a ruling by the Supreme Court called Sparf, S-P-A-R-F versus U.S., that did exactly the opposite of that ruling almost 100 years earlier. The Sparf ruling really was, I think, catastrophic, because not only did it set aside an understanding of jury nullification, but it did so in a rather insidious way. It held that federal judges were no longer required to instruct juries about the extent of their authority regarding nullification. They were no longer supposed to disclose to juries that when they're confronted with a case involving a law of dubious propriety, or a law that was obviously the codification of an injustice, that they can set aside that law as it applies to a defendant. And so this was a deliberate deception, I believe, and it was an act of incrementalism. It was moving away from the principle of fully informed juries being the centerpiece of our system of justice, and moving in the direction of making judges not only the umpires in terms of ensuring that there's fairness in the adversarial setting and clarity in terms of defining the issues, but turning judges really into something that they were not intended to be, which was to be the vehicle through which the validity of a law would be established. That's supposed to be the role carried out by the jury. And that was a very subtle but very important, if you will, apostasy from America's original founding vision of how the justice system is supposed to operate. And from that small acorn grew this immense forest, tree, and eventually forest of rulings and administrative decisions that have, for lack of a better word, nullified the citizen jury system, beginning with the grand juries, but of course including petty or trial juries of all varieties. Let me talk just a brief moment or two about the grand jury and its role in the American and Anglo-Saxon system. Grand juries originally were not supposed to be government bodies. They were supposed to be citizen bodies that would hold government agents and agencies accountable. They were supposed to be able to summon themselves into existence and have compulsory means through subpoena power of obtaining evidence. They were supposed to be able, on what's called proprio motu, or of their own volition, to issue warrants and to issue indictments and presentments. And those are, of course, statements of formal charges that will be tried by a trial jury, by a criminal jury. And until about the 1930s or 1940s, there was still a great deal of independence on the part of grand jury. Unfortunately, what happened once again is that the professional guilds and professional associations that are pretty intimately attached to government engaged in a system of regulatory capture, if you will, where rather than being independent entities that were supposed to hold the players in the justice system accountable to the law, grand juries simply became another appendage of the institutionalized system of prosecution and conviction. They became, in other words, creatures of the prosecution rather than an independent body that would hold, among other people, prosecutors accountable to the law. There has been, in recent years, needle twitch, if you will, in the direction of independence on the part of some grand juries. There's a grand jury in the city of Houston, for instance, that within the last year, year and a half or so, was engaged in a thoroughgoing investigation of corruption regarding the use of breathalyzer units in blood alcohol testing vehicles that were run by the police department. It turns out that these breathalyzer units were notoriously unreliable, that they were turning up false positives, and this was resulting in people being needlessly and improperly sanctioned for impaired driving or losing their driving privileges or going to jail. This, of course, inflicts ruination on the lives of people who've done nothing by any measure to warrant this type of abuse. And the prosecutor tried to shut down the grand jury and actually got slapped down by a conscientious judge. So there's...
Whittemeyer there. Well, I don't know what happened to Whittemeyer. But basically, ladies and gentlemen, this whole concept of jury nullification, that at one time the juries certainly were not only determined guilt or innocence, but whether or not the law was proper. And jury nullification was an important part of the legal system, but unfortunately, or the judiciary system, but unfortunately, that is no longer the case. William, are you back? Well, I'm going to have to ask my producer to just go ahead and get William back on the line again, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Your body is composed of literally trillions of cells. Cells are the building blocks of energy and performance for your health and for the life you want to live. Nutritional Therapeutics, a trusted manufacturer of vitamin supplements, understands that when cells aren't operating at optimum levels, one of the immediate signs is an increase in fatigue. Propax is a daily multiple vitamin enhanced with our proprietary formula called NT Factor. Less fatigue equals more natural energy. Propax with NT Factor addresses cellular damage and gives you health from nature, energy from science. Call today at 1-800-982-9158. Try Propax with NT Factor. Call 1-800-982-9158. Order yours today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging, Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now, 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're typically talking about this concept of jury nullification, which at one time was certainly one of the cornerstones of our judicial system. But, of course, they've been progressively eroded. But William is saying that it seems to be at least a slight recurrence of this. And he was talking about a couple of cases here not too long ago where they were dealing with very, very minute amounts of drugs of some sort, whether we're talking about marijuana or cocaine. I don't know. What's the background on this, William?
Well, the background is that in both of these cases, you're dealing with somebody who had a trivial amount of marijuana. We're talking about an amount that's not even really enough for personal use, let alone for dealing. And prosecutors, following their professional incentives, were trying to make cases that would result in felony charges and prison time. And prison time, of course, means that you'd be in for at least a year. And all kinds of horrible things befall somebody who is designated a felon. It used to be, by the way, that the term felony referred to an offense, a crime, not merely an offense. That's an important distinction, too. Not all offenses are crimes. All crimes are offenses, but not all offenses are crimes. But originally, in the Anglo-Saxon legal lexicon, the term felony referred to a crime for which the death penalty would be an appropriate punishment. And now you can become a felon in the aggregate for such things as driving while intoxicated. You can become a felon for paperwork errors. If you're an accountant, you can become a felon. And in that instance, you're not talking about something where there's an actual intent to deceive. There's not an actual intent to defraud. You're just making administrative errors that are charged as felony. But in these cases, there were attempts by prosecutors to create felons out of people who'd done something that was admittedly stupid and pointless and harmful to themselves, but not a crime as rational people would understand it. And in the Montana case, you had the pool of potential jurors, some 40 or 60 people, being polled by the prosecutor, and it was determined by the judge that they couldn't find a jury of 12 people out of that pool of people who would be willing to convict somebody who'd been found guilty of the offenses described in the prosecuting information. In other words, these people nullified they nullified the prosecution before the trial was even gaveled into session. And so that case was dismissed. And there was a very similar case down in Houston involving somebody who was arrested under similar circumstances and was being prosecuted for a similarly trivial offense.
Well, you mentioned earlier a website that you suggest people go to, and actually those people are actually helping us to put this program on this evening. What is that website?
JudicialReformNow.com.
JudicialReformNow.com.
Yeah,
the gentleman who has that puts up the website is so concerned about what's happening to our judicial system that he's actually helps us to go ahead put this program on. And it's so vitally important you understand, without a legitimate judicial system, the whole structure of society begins to break down. And unfortunately, while there is so much corruption within our judicial system, I know I've been to a court called as a juror, and then suddenly polled beforehand. Is there anybody in the audience here now, any of you potential jurors, who will not accept exactly what I, the judge, am saying? Is the law, or certainly will not accept my direction in coming to your conclusions? Well, basically what the judge is saying, I'm going to determine how this case ends up, and you're simply to be a spectator in this, and you are to certainly vote for a conviction or whatever I tell you to be done. And unfortunately, this is happening increasingly all across America. And I'm sure the judges certainly want to get through the cases as soon as they can. But this is not the purpose of our system. Our system is to make sure that every individual gets a fair trial. And there are a lot of trials today that are not fair. Do you realize that today, one in every 103 Americans is in prison, probation, or parole? One every 103 American adults is in prison, and one in every 31 Americans adults is in prison, probation, or parole. We have more people in prison in America today than any other nation in the world per capita. How does that happen? We have a judicial system that's lost sight of justice. Go right ahead, William.
It's become an industry. It's become a self-sustaining mechanism. And the thing that I find really discouraging is the fact that legislatures convene every year and find new ways to turn people into criminals for acts that are not crimes, let alone offenses. And this is happening with respect to the impending gun grab. You could suddenly find yourself to be designated as a felon if you refuse at a date certain to turn in your firearms if they're deemed criminal by the government of the relevant jurisdiction. It's happening with respect to all kinds of issues. They're turning innocent people into criminals. One of the few things that government makes would be criminals out of innocent men and women.
Well, hold that thought. This is Dr. Stan, I guess, is William Craig. We'll be back here in just a moment talking about the tragedy of what's happened to our judicial system. We need to get back to law under God rather than under men who want to get a reputation because they can get an innocent man convicted.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Longevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Longevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, William Craig, and he's simply been talking about a book written by it. It's called Three Felonies a Day. Three Felonies a Day, written by Professor Silverglate, if I'm correct, Silverglate. And basically, the professor simply says that there is simply every one of us is going to be committing up to three felonies a day, depending upon how the law is interpreted. And we have people certainly in working in the federal government who simply they get a reputation by getting a lot of convictions. Now, basically what they do is they simply come to you and they say, look, we can send you away for 200 years or you can plead guilty to one or another and certainly pay a fine or go to jail for, a few weeks or a few months or maybe a year. What do you want, a 200-year sentence? This is what they tried to do with Dr. Baczynski. What was his crime? Well, he had a cancer treatment that worked, but some of the medication was sent across interstate boundaries and hadn't been approved by the FDA. Dr. Baczynski didn't send it across the boundaries, but they wanted simply to put him away. Why? Well, it's because some friends wanted to use his product and make a lot of money off of it. I don't know how this all worked, but we do know that the FDA actually took out patents exactly like Dr. Baczynski's, gave it to this company. They said that they developed this medication on their own, and then they were going to but they had to get rid of Dr. Baczynski, so they got the federal prosecutors to bring these charges. They wanted to send him away for 200 years. It cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend himself, but he would not plea bargain. And he was certainly exonerated not once, but twice. But this is the way the system really works. And of course, this company that tried to steal his patents eventually went bankrupt. And all the people that bought the stock in it, aw shucks, they lost their money. Ladies and gentlemen, did anybody go to prison for that? Of course not. I mean, basically, it was only the government officials doing their job, trying to send an innocent man to prison for 200 years. And if you haven't heard our interviews with Dr. Baczynski, our four tape set on Dr. Baczynski, or read the book, The Baczynski Breakthrough, understand this is American justice as the way it really is. And until you understand that they have corrupted our legal system, why? Because we've turned away from God. Go right ahead, William.
One of the things I'd like to elaborate on in what you're just saying, Dr. Stan, is the fact that prosecutors and judges are, for all intents and purposes, immune when you're talking about misconduct that results in innocent people being wrongfully convicted and sent to prison, let alone when they extort the cooperation of innocent people by forcing them to accept plea bargain agreements rather than face 10, 20, 30, 40 years in prison for doing things that have injured nobody. There's this really pernicious doctrine of plenary immunity that essentially shields prosecutors from the consequences of their actions, even when they knowingly obstruct justice by withholding exculpatory evidence that they are required by law and by canons of professional conduct to provide to the defense in the course of discovery. The Supreme Court actually ruled, I believe about a year and a half ago, in a case in Louisiana that involved precisely that type of misconduct in, I believe it was a capital murder case. I'll have to go back and check the details of that. But the Supreme Court holding, which is the important part of this discussion, is that there is no limit and there is no recourse. There's no limit to the immunity enjoyed by the prosecutor, and there's no recourse for somebody who is wrongfully convicted because of the culpable misconduct of a prosecutor. And the same, of course, is true for judges. Until they're subject to professional sanctions or actually caught doing something that is felonious, a judge can very rarely be removed from his position, no matter what he does or she does. There's a case right now in one of the suburbs of Illinois. It's in the same congressional district that reelected Jesse Jackson Jr. last year, despite the fact that he was in a mental ward at the Mayo Clinic after suffering a breakdown that was, oddly enough, somewhat convenient given that he was facing investigations for embezzlement. But he was facing prosecution for misappropriation of funds. He suffered a mental breakdown, whether it was legitimate or staged, I don't know. But the fact is that he was in an asylum, and he was reelected in this congressional district. And this judge is part of a system where judges are elected. She has been diagnosed with a severe form, a variant of schizophrenia called schizoaffective disorder. I don't know enough about psychiatry to offer an educated guess as to whether this is a legitimate diagnosis, but her behavior is erratic and disruptive and not conducive to the orderly administration of justice. She, on at least a couple of occasions, has literally been dragged out of the courtroom by the bailiffs because she has become completely irrational. And yet, beginning next month, she will be there in the robes of office holding a gavel, presiding over criminal trials, and probably making decisions that will injure the interests of entirely innocent people, and there's no recourse until you can find some way of administratively relieving her of that position. She's going to continue to inflict misery on people. And one of the things that is suggested here, judicialreformnow.com, once again, that's judicialreformnow.com, is a set of legislative proposals that would actually make judges susceptible to prosecution for misconduct of the sort.
Now, this is a web page that is actually making these suggestions. That's
yes.
judicialreform.com.
Judicialreformnow.com.
Judicialreformnow.com. Go there, read the suggestions that they have. Go right ahead.
Yeah, the second point here is legislative mandate suggests the development of a legislative mandate that failure of a judge to A, follow the law, or B, comply with the judicial canon of ethics is a Class B felony. And then number 10 on this list is shall be a Class D felony for any person to approach any judge in an ex parte manner. And it shall be a Class D felony for a judge to fail to report or take action in the instance of the same. Ex parte is a term which refers to a situation where one side is allowed privileged access to the judge without the other legal counsel being present. I just recently finished a book, reading a book, not writing. I want to write a book about this case, too. Involving the so-called West Memphis Three. And there were three young men who were convicted of a horrific crime involving the murder and mutilation, apparently the sexual molestation of three innocent little children who were found in a creek. And it was a horrible crime, and the three young men were convicted in the absence of anything that any rational person would consider to be evidence. And that's because the presiding judge in this case at every juncture went out of his way to make it impossible for the defense to stage a case and for the defense to impeach the hearsay, double hearsay, triple hearsay, and wildly speculative circumstantial evidence and testimony that were presented by the prosecution. And a lot of what was done in that case involved ex parte communication. The judge would literally huddle with the prosecution and exclude the defense as they would find some way to craft a strategy in order to buttress a case that was entirely threadbare. Threadbare, quite frankly, to the point of utter transparency. And that judge, if I remember correctly, is still serving in that jurisdiction, and the prosecutor who presided over this miscarriage of justice, which was eventually reversed, I mean, eventually the three were exonerated and released after spending 10 years in prison for an admittedly horrible crime that they had nothing to do with. But the prosecutor is now a sitting judge. The prosecutor had engaged in ex parte communication as part of the effort to railroad these three somewhat eccentric but by no means criminal young men into prison. I mean, one of them faced the death penalty. They were trying to execute him on the basis of something that would be laughed out of a moot court in a first-year law school class. But these two people have faced no professional consequences. They both thrived and prospered, in spite of the fact that they not only sent three innocent men to prison, but they ignored at least one very good suspect who was the father of one of the victims and had a history of horrible violence, a lot of it involving knives, domestic violence, assault, terroristic threatening. He was a habitual criminal who was reliably released after serving a very, very brief time in prison for his offense. I think the only prison time he spent was after the trial in 1994, I think 1997, 1998, he ended up serving a brief period in prison as a habitual offender for theft by fraud, theft by deception, counterfeiting, forgery, all kinds of things. But the reason why that individual was so privileged is because he was an informant for a federally funded counter-narcotics task force that was run out of Memphis, Tennessee, which is just across the border, just across the border into Tennessee from West Memphis, Arkansas. But the point I'm making here is that that man, who is a very good suspect for these crimes, was allowed to go unpunished, or at least not prosecuted, unprosecuted. Prosecute him, find out if he's guilty before punishing him, and three innocent people were put in prison, three innocent young men. One of them was put on death row. The judge presided over that abomination of a court hearing, an abomination of a trial, suffered no professional consequences. The prosecutor is now a judge, and under the standards described here at judicialreformnow.com, at least there would be some recourse. Because if you could prove ex parte communication, that's a Class D felony, they'd be prosecuted for that offense. They might not spend time in prison, but the most important thing is they'd be finished in the judicial system. And that's something that simply has to be done. One of the other things I wanted to bring up here, Dr. Stan, is the extent to which our system the American system has been reconfigured in the image of the Soviet system. And that's a hard thing for people to swallow, and a hard thing for people to tolerate, and it strikes people as somewhat implausible. But consider this. Only one out of every 212 cases that is brought before or that is developed by a federal prosecutor, only one every 212 cases do you find a defendant winning in federal court. That's because most of them, better than 90%, are settled with a preemptive plea bargain agreement before the case goes to court. And once you get to court, unfortunately, the federal system in particular, juries are much, much more pliant and much more receptive and much more congenial to the perspective of the prosecution, because one of the things they do is they use as the basis of a preemptive challenge some of the questions you referred to earlier, Dr. Stan. They find out if you're dealing with people who believe in or at least understand the concept of jury nullification. Of course, the preemptive challenge is used to weed those people out of the jury pool. In one case I've written about here in Idaho, there was one by the name of Carol Asher. The time she was 66 years old, this would be 2005, the time frame we're talking about, she was called to serve in a jury dealing with, once again, a really trivial drug offense. A young man who was a member of a local American Indian tribe was accused of possessing a trivial, by trivial I mean microscopic amount of methamphetamine that was hidden inside of, if I remember correctly, a contact lens container inside of a CD case that was in the dashboard, in the glove compartment of a truck that he didn't own. The truck was searched without his consent. The truck actually belonged to somebody who employed him. It was used as a community vehicle by the employees of this restaurant. The police conducted an invalid and unconstitutional search. They never established through fingerprints or any other physical means that the defendant had actually possessed the narcotics, let alone had guilty knowledge of possessing those narcotics. Carol Asher, sitting in the jury, was invited, as were the other jurors, to submit questions through the judge for the two police officers who were the key witnesses. And her questions were not read by the judge. The judge refused to read the questions because she asked that the search was valid and constitutional. And he simply issued the edict that the search was to be considered constitutional. When the jury retired to the chambers, the jury was polled by the foreman as to what they thought of the case. And Carol Asher said, well, it seems to me that the search was invalid. And the foreman said, well, you can't make that. You can't make that ruling because the judge has already said that the search will be considered valid. And Carol Asher said, the judge is obviously wrong. This was obviously a violation of the Fourth Amendment, and I answer to a higher authority than the judge. She managed to persuade two other people to vote against conviction, so the jury was hung, and the case was dismissed. The foreman made a beeline to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor made a beeline to the state attorney general, Lawrence Wasdin of Idaho. And Carol Asher was charged with felony perjury, and they attempted to put her in prison for 14 years because she had acted as a conscientious juror. And what happened is that after about 5 months of intense publicity, the judge ruled in the evidentiary hearing that the case against Carol Asher wouldn't go forward because, as it turns out, there's not a felony perjury statute that applies here, because under Idaho law, there is no provision here that the jurors have to be bound by the rulings of the trial court, by the trial judge. The judge doesn't have that authority. So the case was dismissed. But they tried to put this 66-year-old woman in prison for 14 years, basically a capital sentence, a life sentence, because she had acted as a conscientious juror. That happened here in the state of Idaho.
Well, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your articles there on Lou Rockwell, and how they can get to your PayPal button and help support you and your family. Go right ahead and get that information out.
I really do appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My website is called Pro Libertate, and that's spelled ProLibertate. And the direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or you can go to Google or some other search engine and type in William N. Grigg, and Pro Libertate, and the first return should be the Pro Libertate blog. I try to update it twice a week, at least once every week, and the essays are about 2,000 words long. There is a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay for those who have access to PayPal and are interested in helping to keep my work up and running, keep the blog available to the public. I really do appreciate all the generous help we've received, and you've been a big part of that, Dr. Stan, as have been many members of your audience who have been very kind and generous. A lot of what I write is republished at lewrockwell.com, that's lewrockwell.com. He republishes in the main part of that page a lot of the essays that publish at Pro Libertate, and I also contribute to the blog section of that website, which is at the right-hand border of the page. If you go to lewrockwell.com, the right-hand boundary of your screen will have the blog section. I posted a piece today, about a 600-word article, actually, about these panicky lockdown situations, one of which occurred today in Meridian, Idaho. A young man was seen with a folding shovel, and that caused the school resource officer to hit the panic button and lock down five schools. It really is a remarkable thing to see these kids being frog-marched out of class by people in body armor because some kid brought a shovel to school, but that's just part of the lunacy we're talking about. This really is a country that has completely become untethered, unmoored from reality in many ways, not the least of which, once again, would be the judicial system.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, I would simply point out that nobody wants to mention the fact that Barack Obama's request and demand that we simply begin disarming the American people and either register the rifles or take them away is fully backed by the American Communist Party. Every communist in America supports Barack Obama, and we have to ask, why do the communists want to disarm the American people? We'll be back in a moment.
Your body is composed of literally trillions of cells. Cells are the building blocks of energy and performance for your health and for the life you want to live. Nutritional Therapeutics, a trusted manufacturer of vitamin supplements, understands that when cells aren't operating at optimum levels, one of the immediate signs is an increase in fatigue. Propax is a daily multiple vitamin enhanced with our proprietary formula called NT Factor. Less fatigue equals more natural energy. Propax with NT Factor addresses cellular damage and gives you health from nature, energy from science. Call today at 1-800-982-9158. Try ProPax with NT Factor. Call 1-800-982-9158. Order yours today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease. There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
From
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoy our programs with William Grigg. He'll be back again tomorrow evening. But this evening, he was specifically talking about the judicial system, a judicial reform now, that website we recommend to you. And then, because this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. If you're in a position to help us, you can subscribe to our newsletter. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, where every month you'll get the newsletter and our four best tapes or CDs of the month. Or you could have, maybe you have something you'd like to advertise with us, or maybe you'd like to get the various tape sets we have, our video sets, our DVDs. We have a tremendous certain amount of information on almost every subject. We do carry the book by Frederick Bastiat, The Law. Frederick Bastiat's The Law was written about 1840, 1848, at the same time the Communist Manifesto was written. One advocated an all-powerful socialist society. The other book, Frederick Bastiat's The Law, advocated freedom. But one must understand is that the whole idea of socialism has been financed almost since its inception by people of great wealth who wanted to overthrow the existing structure and establish a structure supposedly democratic, but really one that they could actually control. And that's exactly what we have here in the United States. We have a two-party system where both parties are controlled by the same people. Both political parties support socialism. They support Social Security. They support Medicare. There's nothing wrong with the ideas of it. The only trouble is they're bankrupt. All the money has been stolen. And there's no way we can ever actually pay off the required. But maybe we can make out something to help people for a time being. But sooner or later, we have an $86 trillion debt. That's the real debt if you calculate all the requirements that are on a government to pay the pensions and the Medicare. Well, of course, Medicare, they're going to, of course, Obamacare, is going to simply kill off the elderly and kill off both. That'll solve problems for both Social Security and Medicare. And you say, that couldn't be what they're intending. Why do you think they have the death panels, ladies and gentlemen? Why do they have the death panels in the Obamacare? Why is it you're going to be going to a doctor who cannot do what he wants to, but must do what he's told by the federal government or face fines and imprisonment? That is what's coming down the line. Because, of course, they know what nobody's going to tell you, and that the whole system is corrupt, and we've turned against certainly the concepts of America, where the power of the government was limited so men could be free, towards a system now where every aspect is controlled by one or another aspect of government. If you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that's Brotherhood of Darkness. I do hope if you're in a position to get a case of the books, it actually brings the price down to a fraction of what it ordinarily would be. A case of Brotherhood of Darkness costs you $149.95. You get 64 books. You can give them away. We're almost halfway to having sufficient funding to get the book reprinted. And if you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. And then, of course, you haven't yet heard my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. On population control, the covert agenda. On the World Revolution, and that's, of course, the place where I interview Ambassador Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba at the time that we put Fidel Castro in power. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, we put Fidel Castro in power. The fact he's an enemy is simply all phony. Suddenly, David Rockefeller's daughters go down regularly to visit Fidel, and Fidel comes up to visit David Rockefeller. If you don't believe it, read David Rockefeller's memoirs. We have them. He talks there about the secret society that, of course, the secret cabal that he's part of. Certainly our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. The book, again, is Memoirs. Memoirs by David Rockefeller. You need to understand that these things are not imaginary. They're real. In fact, most of what you think you know isn't true. The media in America is controlled. Get Brotherhood of Darkness and read it and weep. And understand we're on the verge of losing everything that makes life worthwhile. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Go there. You can listen to our programs there 24 hours a day, and live or archived. And then please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Good evening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Gary Arnold, and I guess I've known Gary well over 40 years. He's been at this movement to try to awaken the American people. How long have you been involved in this, Gary?
Probably since 1962.
All right, fine. We started the same year, so it's about 50 years. I've known Gary for an awful long time. He happens to live here in Santa Cruz, where I do. He's certainly on the front lines of a look at seeing what's happening in our country. Now, you must understand that certainly there is a move to create a fascist America, to centralize all power with government and to take away our freedom. And of course, this is all done under idealism. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to help people? Wouldn't it be wonderful to provide pensions for everybody and food for everybody and help them with their housing? And certainly we want medical care for anybody. We don't want people to go without medical care. We don't want people starving. And all of those things are true. But, of course, once the federal government begins to take on this responsibility, then, of course, they can buy votes to centralize more power with the federal government. When I was practicing, started out in medicine, I first took a residency in 1955, right here in Santa Cruz. Nobody went without care. I was at the county hospital. There were county hospitals in every county in America. And basically, they provided care for the poor and indigent. The doctors went there. They worked for nothing, most of them, and certainly they provided care. We had all sorts of local programs to provide food for the elderly. There were homes for the elderly provided, a poor farm, and people went there. Most people, families took care of their own, and there weren't anybody. Nobody died from hunger. Nobody died from lack of medical care. Everybody had a roof over their head, and it wasn't as luxurious as maybe some of the places we have today. Every room in the hospital didn't have a television in it, but nobody died because they couldn't get health care. Now, of course, we're actually coming up with a program under Obamacare, where the people are going to be intentionally killed because the doctor will be incapable of doing what's necessary. And if he tries to treat the patient the way he wants to, why, he can be fined or put in prison by the federal bureaucracy. He has to practice medicine exactly as he told. Most doctors are going to drop out of the system, and then, of course, you'll get certainly untrained people. But that's what's happened in England, where today in England, they kill 120,000 elderly people every year in the hospitals. Let me repeat that, but you can check it out on the internet. They kill 120,000 senior citizens every year in the hospitals in England today. Many people are afraid to go to the hospital because they know that they'll never come out alive. This is what we're facing in America today, because we've turned our back on this wonderful dream of freedom under God, and now we look to the government to provide for us. From the cradle to the grave, Gary Arnold, you pick up the story.
Yeah, you're right, Stan, to give that overview, because the so-called soft kill is moving into a hard kill. And in every country we've ever seen before that genocide is broached is the confiscation of firearms. And I'll be ending up on that subject locally, identifying those lobbyists in the Santa Cruz County that emanate from historical sources. I think if we go back, one thing that I think most people need to understand, and I like this phraseology somewhat because it's hard for people to understand, the truth is that communism is not the people overthrowing the banking establishment. Communism is the tool of the banking establishment used to enslave the people. and we see this, constantly. It's, in fact, the very takeover of the Soviet Union is mentioned in Griffin's book, Jekyll Island, and, of course, in your Matisse book and the Brotherhood of Darkness, and I've got an article called All in the Family. And that cites Raymond Robbins, who said when he was on the Red Cross mission to Russia in 1917, he says, "I'm here to capture Russia for Wall Street. I'm the servant of William Boyce Thompson." And that's from the book Decision to Intervene. And William Boyce Thompson was the director of the Federal Reserve. This all goes back to the central banking groups that move heaven and earth in order to get their way. The other thing you mentioned by breaking into the program this evening is the fact that they're telling you you're getting something good. And of course, Lenin, the person they supported, said, quote, "We do not believe in the external principles of morality. Communist morality is identical to the fight to strengthen the dictatorship of the proletariat. We must be ready to employ trickery, deceit, lawbreaking, withhold, and conceal the truth." And, of course, that's exactly what they're doing. Every newspaper, every day, all the networks are out there with their lies. Fortunately for the Internet, we're able to pierce these falsehoods, but so many people are still skunked by this web of lies that they continue to try to entrap us with. If we go back at the beginning of the 1900s or right before it, we see that there's a coordination between conspiracies. And if people don't understand conspiracy, if they think it's just an argument of ideals, they're never going to get it. They're never going to be able to protect their families or to break through the treachery that's being perpetrated on them. By the 1900s, you already had the coordination of Cecil Rhodes Roundtable and that conspiracy network, which you so brilliantly put together in your Brotherhood of Darkness. And also Sidney and Beatrice Webb had met with Daniel Coit Gilman, who is a member of the Skull and Bones, who is crucial in putting together the foundations. And again, I thank you for putting together that book on foundations, because that is the transmission belt for funding the conspiracy at every level, from the local cities to the international organizations such as ICLEI, which is the front for the World Bank. And
hold that thought, Gary. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Gary is simply pointing out that this whole idea of communism is not an effort to overthrow the wicked bankers so that they can help the people. It's an effort to overthrow the legitimate government so that they can the bankers can control the people. And basically, communism has been financed from its inception by people of great wealth, and many of them have been the international financiers. And Gary certainly quotes from one of the original people who went to Russia to help found communism back in 1917 and 1918, readily admitting he was working for the international financiers, and the international financiers have funded communism. Why? Because you needed an enemy so that you could justify centralizing all power in government to protect the people from the wicked communists who were financed by the very people who were controlling our government here today. And that's why first we put Fidel Castro in power, so we'd have an enemy there. But believe me, David Rockefeller's daughters go down regularly to meet with Fidel, and Fidel comes up to meet with David Rockefeller. And if you doubt that, read David Rockefeller's book, Memoirs. We carry it, David Rockefeller's book, Memoirs, and you'll find out what I'm telling you is true. There really is a secret cabal that controls everything, dedicated to one world government under the control of the ruling elite. And Gary is simply talking about how this whole thing fits together and how this movement has been going on for a long period of time to destroy the limited form of constitutional government we have, and substitute in its place an all-powerful government that will regulate us from the cradle to the grave under the guise of, well, we've got to protect the people from those wicked communists. Gary, pick up the story.
Yeah, in fact, the co-founder of Skull and Bones, which was founded in 1832 as an off-branch of the Illuminati out of Germany, Alfonso Taft, ended up as a ambassador to Russia, already staking out their claim for Russia. And that Red Cross mission, which included Samuel Bertrand, B-E-T-R-O-N, he was also a member of Skull and Bones, went on that particular mission. It was financed, this Red Cross mission was financed by E.H. Harriman, J.P. Morgan, and Mrs. Russell Sage. And, of course, the Russell Sage Foundation was incorporated by Skull and Bones member Daniel Coit Gilman, who was also at one time the head of the California University System, until the Grangers, actually the independent socialists in San Francisco, started pointing out some of the thievery in California, and he went back to be head of John Hopkins at that particular time. But this was a time when, a few years before the Russian Revolution, they got Woodrow Wilson in there, and it was Colonel House who wrote Philip Drew Administrator, which was a blueprint for dictatorship. It almost, you could put Obama in place of the hero in this particular book. And they go down even to the details of calling for a North American Union, going all the way down to Point Fuego or whatever the pass is at in South America. But you follow these same people that are in and out of the government. You take them right up through to 1948 when you're looking at the OSS and the CIA with Alan Dulles, who was a founder of the Council on Foreign Relations. And he, together with William Donovan, were part of a committee called the American Committee for a United Europe. And they used American funds after World War II in order to sack the independent nations of Europe. They had Tom Braden, who's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I debated him once on Crossfire years ago. But he was there to do exactly what they're doing in the United States today, with the foundations favoring different organizations and attacking or destroying other ones. And they worked their evil throughout the United States, and again, through members of the Council on Foreign Relations. It was McGeorge Bundy, who was head of the Ford Foundation, that funded the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions here in California. And its head was Robert Hutchins. And they put together a constitution, a new constitution for the United States. In fact, they took Mr. Tugwell, who in the 1940s, his name was Rex Tugwell, from 1945 to 1948, was part of a committee to frame a world constitution, doing away with the U.S. and all sovereign nations in order to have a world government. And he was featured on the Time magazine cover, which was owned by Henry Luce, also a member of Skull and Bones. So they have their constitution ready to replace the one we have, and certainly there are no Bill of Rights in that constitution whatsoever. And so, you know, whether it's the First Amendment or the Second Amendment, they've been planning to expunge those for a long time. Simultaneously, at the University of Chicago, which was Rockefeller funded, they had a man by the name of Charles Merriam put together organizations and associations that city governments would join, almost like a professional organization that was kind of sold as that. So if you had a city financier or a city manager or somebody in personnel, they had these places where members from the city could take some funds from the city and go off to these conventions throughout the United States and come back with a world view that would push for regionalization, do away with the election of city treasurers and city clerks, and make it more top-down administration. They were preparing a long time ago to create a regionalization. And they made many attempts, which would probably take a little too long to go into detail. But during these same early years with the 1960s, especially under the Kennedy administration, they just took control of it, and they put through the State Department publication 7277, which was to disarm the United States and to have the UN,
control world. I think it's world effectively controlled by the UN, by Lincoln Bloomfeld. And he went to the Fletcher School, which is run today by a trilateralist, Stephen Bosworth. But these organizations are important, and there's a terrific book. I think you might carry it, Who's Who of the Elite. And I believe you also have another list of culprits and players in the New World Order. I really encourage people to get hard copies of that.
We actually do carry that, Who's Who in the Elite. That's by Galen Ross. Did an excellent job. In fact, Galen's going to be our guest, I think, tomorrow or next week, something like that. But go right ahead.
In the 60s, I think Kennedy felt that he was not in control. He did a few things that made them feel unsettled, I believe. One is his very famous speech now against secret societies, which really pinned the tail on the donkey when you're talking about skull and bones. And the other was issuing the United States notes, which bypassed the Federal Reserve.
Well, if I could just comment, if you're out there in the listening audience, what you want to do is go up on the internet and Google in President Kennedy's secret society speech. President Kennedy secret society speech. You'll actually pull it down, read it through. He's talking about the fact that there was a secret society in the United States who was running things behind the scenes. Why don't we ever talk about this secret society? Well, because, of course, anybody who talks about the secret society usually ends up very dead. And how it is that Gary and I have been able to survive all these 50 years since we got started, I don't know. But I sort of like to think maybe God has protected us, because I know a lot of the people we have interviewed have simply disappeared or died under mysterious circumstances. And we're still there as a voice. Gary is certainly always true to his ideals, love for America, and hope to preserve it for generations yet unborn. Go right ahead, Gary.
Right. And also in the 60s, we had the report from Iron Mountain come out, which offered scenarios for the eugenic population reduction, including global warming. And the CFR, John Kenneth Galbraith, who's a historian for basically the CFR, he says, nothing shakes my conclusion that it was written by either Dean Rusk or Claire Booth Luce. And, of course, Claire Booth Luce was the wife of Henry Luce, who was Skull and Bones. And Fletcher Prouty claimed that to have had an interview with that particular study groups, and he says that the missions group was delineated by William Bundy, Dean Rusk, and McNamara. Again, William Bundy was a member of Skull and Bones. He was the head of the CIA for 10 years. He donated to communist Alger Hiss's defense. This is the crossover. These are the billionaires. These are the intelligence agencies. These are the people that are the secretaries of defense. Just as today or this last week, we had Kerry put in as Secretary of Defense as a member of Skull and Bones. I think it gets confusing for the person on the street because of the left-right Hegelian trickery that they tried to get people into, making the left fight the right and the Republicans fight the Democrats and keep people boxed in with limited knowledge. And they support both sides just to keep the people amused or their eye off the ball.
And let me just repeat what Gary said. Basically, they want us to think there's a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. But when the Republicans are in office, do they do away with abortion when they control the Senate and they control the House of Representatives, the President's presidency? No, of course not. They could do it with a simple vote in Congress, but that's not what the agenda is. You've got to get the people pro-life, pro-choice, fighting back and forth, right against the left, conservative against liberal. Whereas, of course, these people working behind the scenes are simply there chortling, and all the times we're just arguing back and forth about these issues. Whereas, of course, the whole thing is that the people who are in charge are certainly not left or right. Certainly the people on the left think that the people on the right control the media. The people on the right think that people on the left control the media. And it's neither one. It's this elite group. It's the other people, the X-Force. or the what I call them, the Brotherhood of Darkness, who controls both political parties, the right and the left, makes mockery out of our electoral process and always comes up with all these things for us to fight about. You know, should we have gay marriage or shouldn't we? Ladies and gentlemen, they're playing games through their minds because they control the media and they control what we think and believe.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountain to the prairie, to the ocean white with gold,
makes you think of Blake, doesn't it? Makes you think of a lot of things. We're going to be in this yet, Mom. Threw that song out of Yip Yip Yap Bang 22 years ago. Sounds better now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Gary Arnold. And Gary, go right ahead with what you were saying about this movement behind the scenes. Until people understand that nothing as it appears to be, It doesn't make sense. And you're talking about Skull and Bones and the Bohemian Grove and the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission, and the Royal Institute for International Affairs, and certainly the Club of Rome and the myriad of organizations out there. There are dozens of these organizations with a common goal and common objective, and that is that a ruling elite should control us, and we should move away from individuals' sovereignty and national sovereignty towards a world government under a ruling elite. Gary, go right ahead.
Yeah, what I'd like to do now is to show how this transmission belt of foundations stems from those organizations I mentioned earlier, like the Ford Foundation and Rockefeller and Russell Sage and Carnegie and all the other ones, right down into the community. Because within the last couple weeks, we've had representatives that look like they're from the community and that look like they, you know, are really concerned about, you know, guns in the hands of people. I'll just mention at the top here just some of the organizations, but I'll get into them because when you get into them, it's really important. But we have a community, Santa Cruz Community, County Community, the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County funds virtually all of the representatives that came in to speak against the guns. And I'll name them here locally, and I'm sure people in their own communities have something similar. One is a Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Yeah, that is, of course, a Marxist organization that's been around for 50 years, pretty close to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me tell you the background of that puppy. They have an interchange with the Fellowship of Reconciliation on their own literature, and they distribute literature from the that center from Santa Barbara with the new constitution. Now, the Fellowship of Reconciliation was created by investment banker George Foster Peabody, who owned oil, railroads. He's part of the banker elite. He was the director of the Rockefeller Foundation. He was on the board of directors of the New York Federal Reserve from 1914 to 1921. The Fellowship for Reconciliation was located at Standard Oil's office at 26 Broadway, and later they moved to the GE building at 5600 Rockefeller Center. And they put together a project some decades ago, and it was called Turn Towards Peace. And this is their quote: initial steps to provide for the establishment of a world government controlled by the United Nations include the repeal of immigration laws to allow up to 1 million people from China to move to America every year, to amend the Constitution to allow the UN to levy direct tax on the American people. I mean, this is outrageous, and people think that this is a nice little group here, and a lot of the members do, because they just are seduced by their anti-war stance. And of course, in years past, we've had people like Norman Thomas and Lindbergh, you know, joined to keep out of wars, and they do take positions at time that an individual would agree with, but they don't know how they're manipulated, just as many people on the right don't know how they're manipulated. But Scott Kennedy, one of the co-founders who died just a couple years ago, received, you know, an award from the Fellowship of Reconciliation in 1989. And they use Gandhi and Martin Luther King as excuses to disarm the American people.
But there's this whole idea that every communist wants to disarm the American people and backs Barack Obama. Why? Because they want to impose a dictatorship. That's why the communists support Barack Hussein Obama and gun legislation. And isn't it certainly interesting that ABC, CBS, NBC, CNBC, and all the other aspects of the controlled media never tells us that what Barack Obama is suggesting as far as guns has the full support of the American Communist Party, funded by people of great wealth who are using the idealism of communism to impose a brutal dictatorship on what was once the land of the free, the home of the brave?
Well, listen to this quote I found from Martin Luther King, which I used before the Board of Supervisors. This is during one of Martin Luther King's high-profile debates. He says, "Violence exercised in mere self-defense in all societies, from the most primitive to the most cultured, is accepted as moral and legal. The principle of self-defense involving weapons and bloodshed has never been condemned, even by Gandhi. When the Negro uses force in self-defense, he does not forfeit the support. He may even win with it by the courage and self-respect." So they're even misrepresenting
the king's earlier states. And he was manipulated, as we know, a lot by funding and so forth. But, you know, some things about the importance of the content of character and so forth had some truth, you know, coming out there that's valuable, that could be is good currency across the political spectrum.
And if anybody doubts that Martin Luther King was executed by our government, we have a four CD set on the execution of Martin Luther King. You need to get it, and you need to listen to it.
While the storm clouds gather, far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America.
Well, Gary, you go right ahead.
Sure. You know, I encourage people. I think Trine Day has an excellent book that shows that the King family, in fact, one of the judges, even attended James Earl's Ray's funeral because he was a patsy set up to take the fall for, what it looks all to like another government execution of somebody they needed to get out of the way. In fact, Martin Luther King wrote a foreword to a book called Negro with Guns. So everything that they say about King's, being a pacifist or not standing up for yourself and turning all your life over to the government is wrong. In fact, one of the ladies from Kentucky, a black lady called Ida B. Wells, urged that, quote, the Winchester rifle deserved a place of honor in every Negro home, quote, unquote. It says the first generation of legal battles by the NAACP centered on defending blacks who used firearms in self-defense. For example, hiring Clarence Darrow to defend a Dr. Ossian Sweet. But today, the NAACP is headed by a man by the name of Benjamin Jealous. And he's out of a left-wing, he was president of a left-wing foundation out of San Francisco called the Rosenberg Foundation. That seeks to reduce people's rights and centralize power and more government control. And just like one of the other recipients from the county's foundation is the ACLU. The ACLU is now headed by Anthony Romero, who was part of the Ford Foundation, and today he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, another group that looked kind of innocuous, but very powerful in influence, that showed up before the Board of Supervisors and encouraging to infringe our gun rights, was a lady represented United Way of America. Well, that's not really true anymore, because in 2009, they changed the name of the organization to United Way Worldwide. And anybody can go to Wikipedia and they can look up United Way Worldwide.
And hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment here with Gary Arnold. Well, this is Dr. Stan. My guest this evening is Gary Arnold, and Gary is simply talking about the various people who came before the Board of Supervisors in the town where we live, and certainly were pushing for gun control, and there were people like the people from the United Way, but the United Way has certainly been taken over, and certainly so many of our organizations previously, where they were in favor of certainly individual freedom and rights, have now been taken over, and what's the common goal? They want to take away our weapons because they want a dictatorship. Every communist in America, go up on the internet and just type in communists want to support Barack Obama gun confiscation, and you'll find out that the communists want to take away our guns. The Communist Party is working full-time in America today. And because they're funded by the great tax-exempt foundations and people of great wealth, and most communists have no idea they're being used any more than most members of the Republican Party understand that the leaders of the Republican Party have been taken over by the same people who control the Democrat Party, and they're both working towards the same goals. They talk different lines, but the ultimate end result, whatever the Republicans are in, is to maintain the socialist programs established by the Democrats. Well, our telephone number, well, basically, before we go on, Gary, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website and get your information and then pick the story up from there.
Yes, they can go to two websites. One is newsexpose.org, and there they can find some articles on one of the other organizations that was there called COPA, but yeah, they'll find a plethora of material there that covers a conspiracy. The other one is themuckraker.net. They have to put the word the in front of it, themuckraker.net. And if they navigate that those articles enough, they'll find one called All in the Family that deals directly with the takeover of the Soviet Union by Wall Street, and goes into George Kennan, and I think it they'll enjoy that. Let me continue on United Way, again, by just looking at Wikipedia. United Way worldwide is supported by 120 corporations. It says 60% of their funds come from the global Fortune 500, including Dutch Shell Oil, ExxonMobil, Chevron, General Electric, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan Chase. So these are the people, you know, they you got your little supervisor sitting there, thinking United Way might be have something to do with the local people's concern about guns in the hands of the people. And really, it is a outside organization that is coordinated with ICLEI, the World Bank, which the county already has a contract and is already changing the laws in order to mesh them, to make them coordinate with the North American Union. And it's... these people are singing. It's the old United Communist Front technique, in which they kind of move the names around and they create the appearance of popular support when really it's all financed.
It's all financed by people of great wealth and the very bankers that the communists speak out against. And the average communist doesn't understand that this whole communist movement he has dedicated his life to is financed by the very people he opposed. Go right ahead.
Right. Well, what's a laugh? You look at the communist papers and they don't mention the Trilats or the CFR or the Bilderbergers or all the formal people of those they put in other terms. They don't dare name the names of the 1% or the wealthy that they pretend that they're against. One of the other organizations is called COPA. It stands for Citizens Organized for Relationship, Power, and Action. It's actually an extension of the Industrial Areas Foundation that was created by Saul Alinsky out of the University of Chicago. Now, Saul Alinsky wrote Rules for Radicals, and he dedicated his book to Satan. And most of these... And
dedicated to Lucifer, but there's not much difference. Go ahead.
And the numbers of organizations in the Monterey Bay area, they're mostly churches. There's the Catholic and Lutheran and Methodist churches here locally that are part of it. And you can bet your bottom dollar that they didn't talk to their parishioners or people in their, you know, in their group. Because I know people in these churches that believe in the Second Amendment. So they just automatically go out there and take their stand. And Alinsky stated that in action, one does not enjoy the luxury of a decision that's consistent both with one's individual conscience and the good of mankind. So he, like Lenin, says in many different words, you know, it's a place to lie and cheat and use deceit to get your way. But then you look at the support for the organization, and it comes from the Panetta Foundation, it comes from the Packard Foundation, it comes from the Santa Cruz County Community Foundation.
Well, if I could just intercede, the Panetta Foundation was headed by Leon Panetta, and he was simply recently resigned as Secretary of Defense, having previously been the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, certainly those are very responsible positions, but I happen to know a little bit about Leon Panetta because I ran against him for Congress, and I looked into his background. He was the most radical, left-wing extremist a Democrat senator in the entire Congress, and certainly most of the Republicans wouldn't even speak to him when they passed him in the hallway. They felt he was so dishonest. This is the man who is always presented as by the local newspaper as a moderate and was able to get reelected here because the newspaper lied about what he did and about his voting record. He had the most extremist left-wing voting record of any member of the House of Representatives when he was there. And later on, of course, Barack Obama chose him to be director of the CIA, and more recently, one of the most powerful positions in the world, Secretary of Defense. Go right ahead. That's, of course, the man who runs the Panetta Foundation. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got his book, Bring Us Together. He campaigned for Nelson Rockefeller way back in 1962 against Goldwater. Later, he was inside the Nixon White House and cooperated with Nixon and Gerald Ford in order to get Nixon out of the White House and get Nelson Rockefeller put in as vice president when Gerald Ford had a couple assassination attempts against him, one here in California, in fact, up north. Then he ended up as chief of staff for Clinton, who's was a protege of Fulbright, and he was also a member of the Institute for Policy Studies, which was put together by Barnett and Russin, and they were the aides for both John J. McCloy of the World Bank and McGeorge Bundy. So IPS was put together, again, not by the people wanting to overthrow the banking establishment. They came directly from the banking establishment, and they were the ones that paraded themselves among the community and in the leftist communities as being against that particular power. They became the left. In fact, it was McGeorge Bundy that funded the National Student Association. This kind of skullduggery, continues even today, without stop. And unless a person understands conspiracy, they're not going to get it. Even in Lincoln's speech, I think it was called House Divided, trying to get things clear through to the people that, if you see all this lumber arrive at a location and it's all cut and it all fits together and it's as it's constructed, and there's nothing, no leftover pieces of board or measurements left around, you can be assured that there's a conspiracy, there's a pre-plan. And we see all the pieces fitting together today, right in front of us. And the fact that they use and depend upon lies and they inculcate themselves with evil, the Fabian socialist on the Patrice's Webb home in England has a stained glass window which has a sheep in wolf's clothing. I mean, they relish they're lying to the people. You look at Skull and Bones, where they crawl into a coffin and use human remains in their rituals. You look at the Bohemian Grove, which is Skull and Bones West, and they have a leadership interactive or interchangeable with the Commonwealth Club, and the Commonwealth Club is put together with Rockefeller's Common Cause, a thing called California Forward. And this group is the largest lobby in the United States, Common Cause is. And it was initially put together by members of the Rockefeller family and Chase, IBM, and I could read off a couple of other big corporations. But the people that join Common Cause think that it's the people against power, and that's how they portray themselves. You can get on their mailing list and see what they're doing. And of course, I'm on their mailing list, and right now all the emails that I'm getting from Common Cause are to push for the confiscation or infringement of the Second Amendment. And it's relentless.
People have to understand this is all coordinated by people of great wealth who use communism, and the communists are doing the same thing. They want to take away our weapons. Why? Because the people of great wealth are afraid the American people are waking up. They want to get them disarmed because they want a dictatorship. And once they have the weapons, well, then, of course, there will be no defense against the coming tyranny. And
yeah,
the genocide that these people plan, they really do plan genocide. Go ahead.
Yeah, and of course we see it today. I mean, this is the same Board of Supervisors where there's a couple members that are on the Air Resources Board. And you can look up almost any day of the week or a couple days any week and see the tic-tac-toe results of Operation Cloverleaf with all the dangerous particles that were cited in USA Today on a front page. And they won't look into that. And I've been over in Monterey in one of the hangars where I talked to some people that have the airplanes, and there's some drones over inside the place. And I talked to the individuals there. They know about Operation Cloverleaf, but they cannot go on record. But,
you know, tell us, what is Operation Cloverleaf? I don't know what it is, but maybe our listeners don't. What is it?
Okay. Yeah, well, if they go to the Internet, they'll find that this is the chemtrail program. And it's run by an outfit called MITRE, M-I-T-R-E. And if they look up MITRE, they'll find that the person that's in charge of it is James Schlesinger, former head of the CIA. And the other person that is part of MITRE, or was part of MITRE, is John P. Holdren, who wrote that book that calls for eliminating, using toxic chemicals and so forth in the book Ecology. I think it was with Paul Ehrlich.
And basically this is Operation Cloverleaf?
Operation Cloverleaf.
Operation Cloverleaf, and of course, basically, the whole this all ties in then to the chemtrails and this whole spraying program by which they can control the weather.
Yeah, well, you can go right into Evergreen Airlines, and that was the former CIA Air America, and I've been down to one of their facilities in Arizona, and there should be a downloadable. I forgot the title of it. Half hour or 45 minutes of an interview with some of the people locally around there about the, you know, Operation Cloverleaf run by Evergreen International.
Well, no, basically, where would that interview be? Would that be just an interview or would it be a video?
It's with Clay Douglas. I think if they put in Clay Douglas and Gary Arnold and chemtrails, it'll probably come up on a search.
All right, go ahead.
Let me see. I'm going to name a few of the other people that showed up that are against the laws here. The other one is the Women's League for Peace and Freedom, and that was, you know, another left-wing group. There's a lot of detail about that. I don't think we have enough time to go into that. That's also supported by the community, Santa Cruz Community Foundation. The Women's Crisis Support was there. That's funded by both taxpayers and the foundation again. Again, the Community Foundation is so dependent on Packard that in their huge building that looks like a military pillbox in Aptos has engraved in the cement wall the Packard's donation and honoring their donations to the operation to control basically they're the busybodies controlling almost every piece of community life in the Santa Cruz County or Monterey Bay area, in fact. But and David Packard was one of the initial members of the Trilateral Commission that was formed with Brzezinski and Kissinger and the rest of them. These are the same people that have said time and time again that they're going to reduce the world's population. They have no bars about talking to each other. They never believed that there'd be enough people that would read their communications. But I'm sure you've had shows with the discussion of Between Two Ages and your man up north with the that keeps his eye on the Trilateral Commission that used to work with Anthony Sutton should be a regular visit by your listener.
That's a Pat Wood, of course. And Between Two Ages that Gary referred to is a book. Between Two Ages, American Detectortronic AIDS. It's a book written by a man named Zygmunt Brzezinski, I read back about 1970. And after David Rockefeller read that book, he contacted Brzezinski and said, I want you to form the Trilateral Commission. That's why Trilateral Commission was organized in 72 and 73. It is the invisible government of the United States. Well, between 1977 and the year 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States through successive administrations, every president and or vice president of the United States during that period came from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. Do you honestly think that happened by accident? Six of the eight presidents of the World Bank, eight of the 10 U.S. World Trade Representatives, seven of the 12 secretaries of state, and nine of the 12 came from the Trilateral Commission, and nine of the 12 secretaries of defense came from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. Does anybody really think that we have a free government in America? You can confirm that at Pat Wood's website, augustreview.org. Go right ahead, Gary.
Yeah, I think people need to keep in mind what Alex Jones emphasizes frequently is that these families, is these hardcore elite, you're talking about 8 or 10,000 of the really bad, evil people, and of course they're able to leverage their activity through with their money and their lies, but you know they're looking at killing 6 billion of the 7 billion people on Earth.
And incredible as it seems, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't read my treatise, Population Control Agenda. Population Control Agenda. You can pull it down off the internet, Population Control Agenda, put my name in, or Radio Liberty. They really do, as Gary said, intend to kill off most of the people on the earth. They're talking about you and your family. They're going to create another war. That war is coming. It's not a matter of if, but when. And of course, there's going to be all sorts of other problems. There's going to be diseases. They're creating all sorts of new and terrible diseases. Why would they do that? Why do they put out millions of dollars to make bird flu, which is deadly to birds but not to humans, now extremely communicable among human beings? Why would anybody do that? We'll be back in a moment. Gary, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. I think you've had Deborah Tavares on a few times, and she did that terrific discovery of that NASA papers, and that together with the Army Fort Meade using radio waves to incarcerate and to damage and injure people fit right alongside the smart meters, which were brought to this county through ICLEI and the PG&E. You go to there's so many interchanges. You can go on their own websites, and they got their logos right up against it. In Santa Cruz also last April, the planning department wrote out a 60-page open-ended set of controls, and both the head of the planning department and one of these people here that's been kind of like a bagman for the funding for the foundations has been named to be head of it. In fact, his name is right under the name of a man by the name of Hugh DeLacy, who was connected with three Soviet spy rings, and his plaque is on the Santa Cruz steps to the courthouse. And this is the same man that was involved with Leon Panetta through the Institute for Policy Studies, and I think Accuracy in Media put out a Panettagate information about a year or two ago showing that letters going back and forth when Panetta was in Congress, and he was sharing information that was sensitive to our defense. But the three foundation-owned newspapers in Santa Cruz or the Monterey Bay area, the Sentinel, the Mercury, and the Monterey Herald, were all purchased by the Bill Gates Foundation. And so we're like some country in Eastern Europe right now as far as the information getting to us, with the exception of yourself and Alex Jones and a few others. But thankfully, that information's getting out there, but we just have to keep it up, and people need to act, send some money, make sure they've got the information, a hard copy, to themselves and their relatives and their family. And they can take a look again at newsexpose.org and themuckraker.net and see some of the stuff that I've been able to generate here with
with my research. And I thank you, Stan, so much.
Well, Gary, I want to thank you. This has been a very, very revealing talk. I really appreciate all the hard work that you've done for the last 50 years. And certainly Gary's been my friend, I guess. Ever since that, I remember seeing him one time, first time I ever met him, it was at a meeting in Southern California. He was dressed in white with a white hat on. I'll never forget that. And black shoes. Anyway, God bless you, Gary. Thank you for everything you've done through the years. And we're going to get you on again sometime real soon. Great program. Very pleased with it.
Thank you, Sam. Good night.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I do hope, of course, you enjoyed the program with Gary Arnold. I think it was outstanding. It was very, very good. And, of course, everything going on today ties into the people of great wealth who want a dictatorship in America, and most of the liberals who are involved in this have no idea they're being used any more than the average communist or Marxist or socialist understands that this whole movement is financed by the people of great wealth. And all this talk about taking from the rich and certainly taxing them more, it's all simply as phony as a $3 bill. But everybody says, oh, yes, we're going to take from the rich, ladies and gentlemen. They're the ones who are financing Barack Obama. And if you really think, of course, that they're going to, Barack Obama is going to take from the rich, you're sadly mistaken. This is all a fraud. You need, of course, to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need, of course, I hope you want to get a case of the books, because you'll have an opportunity probably for a few more weeks. And then we'll close that, and we probably will never make the offer again. You need to get my talk on Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. My talk on Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. My talk on population control, the covert agenda. That's population control, the covert agenda. My talk on the World Revolution, where we interview Ambassador Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba. At the time, we installed Fidel Castro. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we installed Fidel Castro. He didn't win the revolution. He didn't win any battles. He didn't have the support of the Cuban people. We installed him knowing full well he was a communist, but you don't have to take my word for it. You hear what Ambassador Smith has to say, and the DVD is called World Revolution. And you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that most of what you think you know is not true. They control the media, and as a result, they largely control what the American people think. Well, certainly we hope you go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 24 hours a day at radioliberty.com, live, archived. Of course, you can get us if you have a KU satellite. You can get us on shortwave. You can get us if you have an iPhone or an iPad. Or you can, if you have a phone with unlimited minutes, you can get our afternoon program on Genesis 24 hours a day. They're all available by calling going to radioliberty.com. And then, of course, your job is to get other people listening to our programs. They may think we're crazy when they begin, but before long, they're going to be afraid we're not. We hope, of course, when you go to our website, you'll look at all the books and DVDs and tape sets and other things that we have, all sorts of information, whether it be the murder of Martin Luther King, a four CD set called The Execution of Martin Luther King. We have one on the execution of Bobby Kennedy, have several on the execution of Jack Kennedy. We have certainly a number of DVDs on what happened on 9/11. And you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, this was not brought down by terrorists. You saw the planes hit the building, but that isn't what brought the buildings down. There were internal explosives in them. We have two forced tape sets on 9/11. One of them interviews with a man named Jimmy Walters, an extremely wealthy man from New York, who had to flee the country because he was told he was going to be killed for daring to point out the fact that there is no way that those buildings came down because the planes hit them. Reality is usually scoffed at, but illusion is usually king, and last thing I knew, Jimmy Walters was hiding in Europe. And whether they've killed him since then, I don't know. I do know the number of people I've interviewed have been killed. We have a four CD set. It's called Deadly Assassins, where I actually interview two CIA assassins. One of them is dead. The other has disappeared. Colonel Marvin's dead. Chip Tatum has disappeared. And then, of course, in that support CD set is an interview with a man who tracked down the man who was paid to kill General George Patton. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, he was paid to kill General George Patton. But we can't let the American people know that sort of thing, can we? You see, reality is usually scoffed at, and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection, our number 1-800-544-8927.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains to the prairie to the ocean.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour. It is 14 February 2013. It is Thursday. And I hope you guys remembered your Valentine. Why? Because it's important periodically to say to someone they're special. And today is a good day to do that. Yeah, I know there's probably pagan background to the holiday or whatever. Let's just, on the surface, say recognize somebody that's special to you. And guys, don't fall for the, oh, honey, I don't need anything. I just want you. Don't fall for that. It will boomerang on you. I'm telling you, it'll boomerang because you're supposed to overcome that and show how much you care because you went and did something anyway. It's called whiplash. Anyway, and girls, ladies,